Welcome. It's the Ask the Pastor program on the Messenger of Good News Worldwide, KFUO. KFUO is a broadcast ministry of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. I'm your host, Roland Lettner. Thanks for being with us. Thanks to my panel, Pastor Anthony Iovine, all the way up there in the Northeast in New Milford, New Jersey, for that lesson in Luke chapter 4, verses 31 to 44. If you didn't get a chance to get in during that hour of the program, those calls, questions, still welcome during this hour as well. Things in the news, things that you may have heard at church, things that are going on, those pesky questions that you may have about things you learned way, 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 way back in the day when you were in catechism class and it didn't quite seem to ring true. All fair game, all fodder for this hour of the program, the Ask the Pastor Hour. Joining us, boy, this is such a privilege and so much fun for a Friday especially. Pastor Dave Andrews is here. He's the Executive Director of Lutheran Blind Missions. How are you?
I'm okay. How about yourself?
Oh, wait a minute. I expected something better out of you.
Well,
just okay?
I agreed to come on KFUO today because I knew at least I'd be doing one thing worthwhile this week. I love the Super Bowl.
Oh, yeah.
I'm almost worthless this whole week leading up to it. I'm just such a football fanatic. My wife rolls her eyes, and then she also does those nonverbals, so she knows that I'm getting the message from her because I can't see her roll her eyes because I am totally blind. But she wants me to know that she's disgusted.
Now, let me ask you a question. How does a blind person enjoy a Super Bowl game? Isn't it a visual event?
Well, it can be. I will have a transistor radio with an earbud in one ear and the TV in the other ear.
See, you're dating yourself when you say transistor radio. You know, my friend, it's all digital today.
Not my little transistor.
Actually,
I've got a couple things that aren't that are transistor and not digital, because the purists truly still believe the better audio sound comes from those things that aren't fully digital.
I agree. I still remember my folks had a Philco Ford.
Oh,
now it had the turntable. It had the tuner. It had an FM tuner with it. All right.
Mm-hmm.
And it had that one massive speaker and then the two smaller speakers and the little cabinet on the side.
Yeah.
And it was built like a fine piece of furniture.
Yeah.
Not that plastic molded stuff that you get today, but and you know what? You could feel, I remember sitting in front of that thing, watching the glow of the dial.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And as a young man, I would scan up and down that dial on wintry mornings looking for school closing reports.
Is that right?
And I still remember, you know, in that.
Well, now,
in that
Roland, that's a different subject. Anything to get out of school, does sound like you.
And you know, I remember sitting in front of it. The room was dark. You just had the glow. You could see coming through, you know, because you had sort of a fabric covering over the speakers.
Mm-hmm.
You could see the glow of the tubes coming through.
Mm-hmm.
And you could feel the heat. You could feel the warmth of those tubes. Also.
Yeah,
so
and, if mom and dad weren't around and you could turn it up, you could feel the vibration.
Oh, yeah, every once in a while. Yeah.
Oh, man.
See, you know, our kids are never going to experience something like that. and more's the pity for them.
Yeah.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. KFUO at KFUO.org. Let's go to the phones quickly, Pastor Andrus,
okay,
and pick up something we were talking about in the previous hour, which was demons there from Luke chapter 4. Herman, good morning.
Yes, good morning. Interesting discussion on the older technology. The old National Geographic magazines had advertisements for that type of technology. It was all made in America then.
Oh, yeah.
By the way, on the last subject of chapter 4 of Luke, and Jesus preaching and the evil spirits and demons coming forth and acknowledging who he is, and he silences them. Would it be that they know Jesus on the basis of the supernatural realm in which God created them around heaven, and around and from which Satan, Lucifer, the head rebellious angel, led them against God and were thrown out of heaven? So they would know Jesus essentially from that spiritual realm, the supernatural realm in which they circulated, as opposed to, say, having to recourse to a first century version of Google or Wikipedia to try to find out who Jesus was.
I think the answer is both. They did know him from the supernatural world because he is the creator. Yet, this God now became human? Now, this might be different. And, hey, our head demon says, trip him up, get him dead. And so they were coming at him from a different angle and confused by that as well. Today, he knows him as the one who shook the gates of hell and who broke through and freed everybody who will trust in him. So they now even fear him more.
Yes, I thought that that they came to him certainly with a knowledge that he was extraordinary and needed to be opposed.
Yeah, absolutely. You know,
the question I have about that, didn't get a chance to ask Pastor Iovine, is what do the demons perceive about Christ at this time? Do they honestly believe they can impede his mission?
Today, you mean?
Well, today and even then at the time when they're possessing people in the synagogue. Did they really think they had a chance to throw everything over the side?
In Jesus' day, I think they thought they had a chance because they didn't know anything different. And they knew that he was human and that he could be tempted just like any other human. So I think they actually thought they might have a chance there. And truly, he was not, just because he was God, free from being tempted. Because he was human in every single way. So the potentiality of him falling into sin was there. And through both his humanity and divinity, both, did he overcome. Today, if they come in confrontation with Jesus, they shrink and run. What they hope is that Christians will cower and not turn to Jesus.
All right. Herman, thanks for the call this morning.
Thank you.
Take care, my friend. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, KFUO at KFUO.org. Now, hey, here comes something from the Christian Post. Now, this came out yesterday, but it's kind of making the wires a little bit. It says, Colin Kaepernick. Now, if you don't know that name, it happens to be the team the Rams beat once and tied once this year.
Yep.
But somehow managed to make it to the Super Bowl anyway. No grudge there. 49ers quarterback who is gearing up for his very first Super Bowl. You know, he's sort of the boy wonder right now. He is the hot thing in sports news. Says he's not afraid to admit that God has a part to play in his upcoming championship game. What do you think, Pastor Andrews? Does God pick favor? Are you praying for one team over another?
No, I'm not praying for that. I do pray that no one gets severely hurt, as has happened in some Super Bowls.
Well, there goes half the fun.
I said severely hurt.
Okay.
And actually, if you really talk to football players, I mean, even when they get hit and they go flying through the air and they land, they're usually not injured.
Right.
They learn how to fall and know how to fall, so they aren't hurt. It might look like it to us, but most of the time, 98% of the time, they just get up and walk away. But as far as does God take sides? No. Whenever I think about God taking sides, I always turn to 2 Kings chapter 6, verses 8 through the end of the chapter, where Elisha has the army of the Arameans circling him, and his servant says, oh, my father, we're in trouble. And he says, no, Lord, open his eyes, and they see the chariots of fire. And then he prays that they be blinded, and then he goes out and says, follow me, I'll take you to the prophet, and he leads him right into Samaria. And then the king, and this is where I'm coming to, the king says, shall I kill them, my father, shall I kill them? Like, yeah, we've got them. And Elisha says, you don't kill prisoners of war. Feed them. Let them go. God's on the side of mercy. That's the side he will take, always. Mercy.
It says here that the Christian quarterback, who bears several tattoos, sort of, you know, from nose to knees, he's covered in them.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he is. He has a tattoo of Psalm 18:39 on his throwing shoulder. And it, you know, before you run and look that up, it says, you arm me, now I guess no pun there, you arm me with the strength for battle.
Oh, my gosh. Okay.
It then says he then, let's see, He says his faith prepared him for the pressure of the competition that is gearing up on this big Super Bowl Sunday yet to come.
Uh-huh.
Just because you're in a situation you haven't been in before doesn't mean you have to feel pressure from it, he says.
Mm-hmm.
God is always someone I lean on. My faith is something that always keeps my feet on the ground and makes me level-headed. That's an interesting definition of faith.
It is, and this is one thing I have heard from several football players this week. As they say, I'm almost worthless this week. And I'm not worthless, but I have not put in 100%, just 80% this week, and the other 20%. I'm catching all of the interviews and things. And there are several football players who are Christians who do comment. And actually, one who I don't think was a Christian, or if he is, he's so quasi. And I liked his comment. He said, you know, those who have faith seem to find an inner peace and strength that they can throw their worries and tensions on God. It does seem to help them. That was his comment. I thought that was interesting. And I think there's some truth to that. Isn't that really what God says? Don't be anxious about anything, but by everything in prayer, petition, let your requests be made known unto me. Philippians 4:4.
But is that faith or is that a benefit of your faith?
Is there a difference?
I don't know. You're the professional.
is there a difference? That's a rhetorical question. No, there is no difference. That is both a result, a benefit, and a cause of. It's all of them. It's all of it. And probably more, too.
So you want to reveal for whom you were rooting this weekend?
Sure, I guess I can. I'm thinking if I'm going to get myself in trouble. No, I don't think so. I'm rooting for the Baltimore Ravens.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So you're going for the whole other, it's not even in-division stuff, you're going for the whole other league.
Yes, that is true. That is true. Actually, in heart of all hearts.
Well, conference, I guess, technically.
I'm a Green Bay Packer fan, which is the other conference.
Well, that's true.
Baltimore. I'm rooting for them probably because they're the underdog.
Ah, okay. So in a way, though, you are being, as the Beach Boys said, true to your school.
Yes. Mm-hmm. The underdogs.
Yeah, the underdog. I meant the AFC.
Oh!
Hey, you know, there's something else out there that's getting almost as much coverage as the Super Bowl. I mentioned this to you when I got you on the phone here a moment ago, but you hadn't heard the story. But what surprised me was
I'm listening to too much football.
Well,
I
first found this. I kid you not. I didn't find this in a domestic paper. Didn't find it in a local newspaper, though it happened here in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
I found this in a newspaper that comes out of the United Kingdom.
Oh, goodness.
The Daily Mail. And it's about, listen to this. Here's the headline. I give God 10%. Why do you get 18?
Mm-hmm.
And it's about a rude note that a pastor left objecting to a mandatory minimum tip for a large party at a restaurant at Applebee's here in the St. Louis area. And the way it goes is something to this effect. An Applebee's waitress has been fired after a bizarre handwritten note from an annoyed customer turned into the latest internet sensation. The waitress in St. Louis, Missouri, identified as Chelsea Welsh, was shown the door 2 days after she posted the passive-aggressive memo on the popular site Reddit.com. Next to the line, indicating an 18% tip had been automatically added to the bill, the customer, a local pastor, crossed out the tip total, replaced it with a zero, and wrote, I give God 10%, why do you get 18?
Mm.
She then signed the bill, Pastor Alois Bell.
Mm.
Befuddled, Ms. Welch posted a photo of the bill on the Reddit website with the headline, My mistake, sir, I'm sure Jesus will pay for my rent and groceries. Oh, well, you know, I don't know how to start disassembling that to figure out what's going on here.
Yeah. My first thought is, why did she get fired and shown the door? But I wonder if there's something in her contract that says she's not allowed to do something like
that. Well, I would think it is bad form to photograph anyone's bill or credit card receipt in this case and put a photograph, even if you redact parts of it, on the web.
Mm-hmm.
And I think from what I've read in several stories, the issue was that she put the photo of the bill on the web, not the commentary that necessarily went along with it.
Okay. That, I think that needs to be brought out because that was the first thought that crossed through my mind. Wow, now to move to the comments, both by her and by the pastor. Well, I my first reaction is to take question with the pastor, because everybody, no, maybe everybody does not know. Waiters and waitresses now get far, if they get nothing on tips, they get very little money. The hourly wage is way below the minimum wage. And, by the way, most people may not realize this also, but anything that she collects, now by law, he or she is required to put in a pool, and it's split among all the servers, the one who cleans the table, as well as all of the waiters or waitresses. So it's an even sharing among people. And so it's not that that person's making a lot of money. And then if you look at an 18% tip of $100 is $18, she's probably spending an hour and a half of time there. So that's really only $12 an hour. That's not a lot of money.
No, it's not.
So when you break it down, it's not significant. And plus, they're going about their job and in service. And well, I guess I'm taking the defense of the people, because I see and know and experience what they go through, and I'm grateful for their service.
Here's what Ms. Welsh had to say to another newspaper that finally, local stations apparently cannot track her down. But this is, like I said, global. This is driving global. I don't know what it is about this story, but it's in several UK papers. It's made some other newspapers. It's viral across the web. And the waitress, Ms. Welsh, who put this photograph up on the web with the comment, said this in the one interview that I could find that she's given. When I posted this, I didn't represent Applebee's in a bad light. In fact, I didn't represent them at all. I did my best to protect the identity of all parties involved. I didn't break any specific guidelines in the company handbook. I checked it.
Right?
She went on. Now, if there's an enterprising lawyer in St. Louis listening to this program, he's probably trying to track down Chelsea right now. She went on, but because this person got embarrassed that their selfishness was made public, Applebee's has made it clear that they would rather lose a dedicated employee than lose an angry customer. That's a policy I just can't understand. Again, regardless of what the receipt said, I don't think it's, you know, you don't want waiters and waitresses putting photographs of your credit card bill on the web.
Right.
I think that really is the issue that she's missed here.
Yeah. Now I'm just thinking again, coming back to the pastor's comments. I don't understand. I'm trying to put the best construction on it, because that's what Martin Luther always, well, not just Martin Luther, but our scriptures teach us to do.
Well, before you do that, hold your thought for a moment, because apparently the pastor was recently on the Channel 2 News here in St. Louis on KTVI.
Ah.
All right, she was on there yesterday, and the pastor said she should have thought better of the message she wrote. Ms. Bell, who is the pastor in question, preaches at the Truth in the Word Deliverance Ministries. That's her congregation. She told the station that it was a lapse in her judgment. I shouldn't have done that. I apologize for that. I'm human. I did that. She also said that despite reports, she didn't stiff the waitress. In fact, she left two tips. The 18%, even though she scratched it out, was still applied to her credit card, apparently. And she also left $6 on the table. Now, just as a point of interest, apparently there's a boycott Applebee's for Chelsea Welch's page that's sprung up on Facebook. All right, but to the pastor's comments and best construction as our rubric for discerning what she said, what do you think?
I remember the first time I had a group or was part of a group, and they said, you know, and the gratuity is 18%, it's already added on. It's like, what? I was a bit taken by surprise, and I'm thinking the pastor may have been a bit surprised by this automatic, because actually, waiters and waitresses, when you leave a tip, it's supposed to be in recognition of their service.
Right.
And you're supposed to have that opportunity to do a great tip if they did a great job, and not so much of a tip if they didn't do such a good job. So, but to be told, this is what it is, that's probably what rubbed her wrong. That's my hunch.
Well, again, the first story that I found a couple of days ago before this thing went viral, I'm not even sure where I first picked up upon it, but the complaint was that they understood, it's posted quite clearly in the restaurant, that there is this gratuity that is automatic for certain size parties. Apparently it's in the menu as well. So they should have known it, and when the bill came, the pastor wanted to divide the check up among the individuals to avoid the 18%. Now, that's the way the first story put it.
Okay. The other thought that occurs to me, okay, and that's helpful. That is helpful. The other thought, I wonder if the pastor is trying to be cute. You know, we're giving you 18%. Do you give God his 10%? Trying to do it in a positive light that, you know, all things are a gift and we're giving you this, but are you remembering God? Now, that's a bit of a law statement.
Yeah.
Yet sometimes people are trying to, especially with the percentage, we immediately as Christians think, okay, percentage, well, we should be giving a certain percentage, whether it be 10 or 2 or whatever you choose, but you should be specific with what that is. I bet she was trying to be cute about it, too.
Well, why bring God into it in the first place?
Oh, I bring God into it all the time.
Do you?
Oh, any place, everywhere, all the time. You bet.
But I would bet you do it in a more positive way.
Well,
I hope you do.
Yeah, well, yes, and then there are sometimes I look back and go, boy, Dave, you really messed up that one. That came off pretty bad. I mean, it happens. You have bad days.
Even pastors? Really?
Yeah.
No, surely you jest, dear pastor.
If only.
You know, if only you could take that problem congregant and cast them out like Jesus does demons, your church would be so much better, don't you think?
No, actually, I won't go there. I look more to myself. I know you're trying to be cute there, but
just a little bit, a little tongue-in-cheek. Don't take that seriously.
Yeah, but I love it when God's people are cranky and they speak up and are gruff, because that gives the opportunity for engagement and talk, and they need God's love and comfort too. I never talk about alligators in the congregation. They're all sheep. Sheep, sheep, sheep.
Well, for all those who are cranky in the audience, you want to give out the address where you're preaching this weekend?
sure, I'm not. Although my two girls at home would probably say it's at 9910. And Dad is always talking to us about God.
Yeah, the long-suffering pastor's children, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, the ones who always actually have to know their catechism because, well, their dad's the pastor.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
They can't do anything. Well, that's where the pressure really is on. But, no, it just kind of struck me that if you've got a complaint about what the gratuity is, you don't have to bring God into it at all. Just say, I prefer, you know, I don't believe in your policy. I defer your policy, whatever.
Yeah. You know, if you wanted to be cute, this is off the top of my head. Okay. We gladly give you a gratuity. God gave us even more, his love through his son, Jesus. That would have been an interesting way to sign it.
Yeah. You know, yeah. As far as gratuities go, 18% a bit much, but nothing in comparison to what Christ gave, which was all.
Yeah.
Yeah. Something. Yeah. I can see.
110%. Might as well play it with that, you know. Yeah.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Pastor Dave Andrus is with us. He serves as the executive director of Lutheran Blind Missions. And Pastor Dave, when we get back from this break, tell us a little bit about what the work is that you do for Lutheran Blind Missions. And then we've got a stack of other stuff for Friday. Boy, we're going to have to get really, you know, put the gas down.
Oh, come on. We're having fun.
All right. Well, we'll be right back. Stick around, friends. Pastor Andrus returns in just a moment. Good morning. We return to Ask the Pastor here on the Messenger of Good News Worldwide, KFUO, with Pastor Dave Andrus as our guest. And as I mentioned going to the break, he serves as the Executive Director of Lutheran Blind Missions. And it's always a privilege, Pastor, to let you spend a moment or two during the program to talk about what the work of that organization is and how we can help you out.
Well, thank you. Two quick comments. One, we have United Lutheran Blind Mission with Lutheran Braille Workers. That's the organization from California. And together, we're able to do even more together. LBW, by and large, has done Bibles that go around the world, both Braille and large print. Putting the two organizations together gives us a stronger base to serve more people who are blind. It helps both the donors go, why two groups? Now there's just one. But also people who are blind. A lot of the things that we do here in the United States, we're talking about taking abroad with the outreach centers, the training, and using people who are blind to reach others who are blind. So that's the primary reason for our uniting. With the unification, I'm now called the Director of Christian Outreach, which basically means I do everything I've done before, but just a different title, and it's mostly here in the U.S. And then the second thing you had asked, what am I about, I just actually during the break ate my peanut butter sandwich. We ran out of jelly last week, so it's just peanut butter.
Times are hard, Pastor.
Oh, man, because as soon as I get off the radio here, I go to a recording studio to do some more recording. We're in the process of making an audio Bible study for people who are blind and visually impaired. There are audio Bibles that are available. We provide that to our organization even, both Braille, large print, and audio Bibles. And if anybody wants a real easy one, it's the English Standard Version audio. Just let us know. But then, okay, you can read it, but how do you understand it? Concordia Publishing House has a Today's Light devotional that you read through every day, and it helps you work through the Bible in a two-year time. We do that in Braille and large print, but not audio. So we're utilizing that as the foundation, but then modifying it so it's more friendly for people who are blind and for the audio listening person, because that's slightly different than the written culture, the oral culture. So I'm going to be working on that audio Bible study this afternoon.
And you said you have a Bible that goes all the way around the world? I was going to say, that's a really big Bible.
Well, it's God's Word. It's everywhere.
There you go. No, but on a serious note for a moment, I'm curious because last weekend, just following the 40th anniversary of Roe versus Wade, on the Saturday program that I have, I talked to Jill Stanek about showing graphic images of abortion, because it seems that today, more than ever before, culture, for the most part, is visually oriented. The news is all about being able to see the president with little children around him, and then he talks about gun control, or whatever the case it may be, or when the health care bill was out there. Or what it seems that it's all about visual imagery. So I guess really what I'm asking is, without the benefit of having that influence, do blind people think differently about these issues because they don't have that maybe driving what their opinion may be?
Different. That's an interesting question I've never thought of.
Do you have to pay attention to the words more than you do, obviously, than we pay attention to the images?
Yes. You use the phrase, we pay attention to the message rather than the images.
Right.
And so, yes, there is a definite, and that's why we're working hard at making this audio Bible study. We're focusing in more on the message and how it's conveyed, because you can paint a picture in a person's mind. That's what radio is all about.
Oh, yeah.
But TV does not do that, and a lot of written media is no longer doing that either. Now, to that question, do they see it differently? I think in some ways, yes, because I think Americans are driven more by the visual to push them into a response, whether it be take the life issue, either for or against abortion. Person who is blind, you got to come at it a whole different angle with a whole different rationale set. So a lot of the arguments that are out there mean nothing to them.
Hmm.
So here, for an example, if I were talking to an audience of people who are blind, well, would you have liked to have been killed before you got a chance, not even have a life? Or how about when you get older and life's not so easy? Would you like somebody to say, well, because you aren't functioning very well, we're just going to cut you off? These are the issues of life, not either to let it not happen or to cut it short because it's not perfect.
Yeah, some make the argument that because the rhetoric has gotten to the point where we're shouting past each other,
mm-hmm.
and because culture is so visually oriented, what really is going to shift the debate right now is let people see what an abortion is.
Mm.
You know, if it's a right, if it's a positive thing, if it's a good thing for a mother to kill a child, and it's the height of motherly love rather than let a child be born and suffer with spina bifida or blindness or something like this or Down syndrome, you know, let them see what it is. If it's that good of a thing, let them see what it looks like. What do you think?
I'm going to answer it with a different, with a question of my own. A couple years ago, this came up just a week ago. The movie that Mel Gibson put out about the crucifixion of
Passion
Jesus.
Of the Christ.
Passion of Christ. Thank you. There was a whole conversation among the blind community. Can we get this with video description? And they actually did come out with it. They felt trapped and pushed away because it wasn't there right away. But then also in connection with that was how graphic do you want to get with this description? And then secondly, do I show this to my confirmation students? And so the real question becomes this whole thing, do we really want that big of a shock value? Because that's really what some of this comes down to. And that's what The Passion of Christ really was. And it's a very good movie, but be ready. Be ready to be gripped and to cry, because it really shows you how cruel they were to Jesus. And that, I think, is helpful for Christians.
But, you know, I thought of a couple of things.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think perhaps the argument about, you know, offending youth maybe doesn't hold water, because I, you know, my wife, God bless her, reminds me how old I am. And we were, you know, my oldest is going to be 16 in a couple of months, and, you know, the whole driving thing is going on. And,
lots of luck.
Yeah, there. Yeah. Perhaps you'd like to teach her how. I'm not very good at this sort of thing. Because you may be far more patient than I am. But I remembered back when I was going to, of all places, Parkway North High School, mm-hmm. way back in the day, back in the late mm-hmm. 70s, and I was sitting in driver's ed class, and I remember watching a movie, probably made, you know, sometime in the 60s, called Blood on the Highway.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a film that sort of recreated the events leading up to these horrific car accidents mm-hmm. where people were killed. And then I remember seeing the actual stills that were taken at the crash scenes, and along with the bodies and the blood and the viscera and all that.
Mm-hmm.
I also remember as part of that class being taken out to the Highway Patrol office out there off Highway 40 near Chesterfield
mm-hmm.
and being shown autopsy photos of people who had been drinking and driving. Nobody was worried about offending me. They had a more important goal in mind, which was teach me not to be stupid behind the wheel.
And it probably did work.
Oh, my goodness, it worked.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't drive till I was 18. No, I started driving a little bit after 16, but believe me, those images were always in my mind's eye. I tended not to do the stupid stuff that some of my friends did because of that. And then when you teach people about the Holocaust, mm-hmm. you know, what's the big thing about the Holocaust is the imagery that accompanies the narration of the history. And we don't worry about showing that to our kids.
And there is, and that's the big dilemma that some people, and that's, I think, why Mel Gibson made this movie, were pushed upon with the video, with everything, including the negative things that we don't want people. So shouldn't we even up the score and show the other side?
Yeah.
The problem I'm seeing, and I'm already seeing it in my 13 and 16-year-old, you become desensitized to violence and shock, because they're shocked and they see so much violence already. And when you become desensitized to it, it sometimes dehumanizes you.
Well, that is true. I mean, in my generation at that time, you didn't have the preponderance of violent video games and the uber-violent I think the worst thing that that I saw was probably Mad Max, The Road Warrior. You know, that dystopian future with Mel Gibson. Speaking of Mel Gibson, you know, out there as the lone guy riding. Yeah, but yeah, it wasn't, the world wasn't quite as graphic as it is today. Hey, let's go back to the phones, Pastor Anders. Linda's on the line. Linda, good morning.
Hi. I just heard something on the radio, or I don't remember where I heard it, about that little young teenage boy who was black and was from Chicago, and I think it was in the 60s or maybe 50s, I don't know. And he went down to visit his family in the South.
That would be Emmett Till.
Yeah, okay. No. Okay, and then he got, because he spoke to this white woman, he got beat up and was real bad. And his body was sent back home to Chicago. And they said, oh, you have to have a closed casket. And she says, no, I want them to see what they did to my baby. Mm. And that was the beginning of the civil rights. Mm. Maybe that's what we need to do with abortion.
Pastor Anders, what do you think?
It's upping the stakes. That's certainly true. It would give a visual. And quite honestly, there are those things out there that, and we have done that. I know of several pastors who have, and I don't remember where they got it, this little box, and they open it up, and it shows the little baby at different stages of life, from 1 month, 2 months, 3 months. And they show the confirmation kids this and said, see, it's a real life. If you abort, you're destroying a life. And we have shown pictures of DNCs and what's left, and this was a human being. And so the problem that I see, and I'm not saying we should or shouldn't, is that when you up the stakes and you do this, then all of a sudden people, again, become desensitized. Oh, I've seen that already. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And they start ignoring that message. They may be shocked the first time.
Yeah, but don't you think, Pastor Anders, that if we were that desensitized to violence, Hollywood would stop making violent movies because nobody would want to watch them? They'd be old hat.
I don't know.
Linda, how about you? What do you think?
Well, it worked for civil rights. That's all I can say, you know. I don't know. A lot of these people, they think, oh, an abortion, and they don't really know what an abortion is. They don't really know what it does to the baby. I think maybe when partial birth abortion was so high, and they did tell a few things about it, I think pretty much it's not, is that, I may be wrong on that, but is that not practiced as much anymore?
There are only three doctors left in the United States that will do late-term abortions, yeah.
Right, and so I mean, that worked with that one, you know. I don't know, it just, I mean, I get so tired of, like, that Gabby Gifford. I mean, and I'm not saying these people that got the kids that got killed up in Sandy Hook, or you know, but they say they go, we got to do something to stop this violence with the kids. And from what I understand, she's pretty good in abortion. So, I mean, I'm just so tired of these hypocrites out there. They talk about the children. Obama gets all these kids around him, and he says, oh, we got to protect these kids. And in Illinois, even the kids that were born alive from an abortion, he approved it three times to let them just be put in a closet and die on their own. They're just a bunch of hypocrites, and I don't understand why people,
well,
they don't understand it.
And that was my point, Pastor Anders. Thank you for the call, Linda.
Okay.
That was my point about bringing up the visual imagery, because, you see, they're using the children for a certain political point of view. I'm not speaking about just the president, but a number of different causes do this. And, you know,
here's the dilemma with this whole conversation. And Linda's presupposition is, if we show them, if they see it's a life, they won't abort it. I am not sure that presupposition is correct.
Well, now, our very good friend, Pastor Nabil Noor, who works greatly in the cause for life, works to fund an ultrasound machine at a crisis pregnancy center up in the Dakotas where he is. Mm-hmm. And it's demonstrable now that women, when they see what is inside of them and that it has a heartbeat and that it moves and that it can smile and do different things, most of the time, not every time, but most of the time, when they see that, they change their mind about aborting that child.
I'm not going to say no to that, but I have also dealt with many, I don't know how else to say it, teenage girls who, I heard you in confirmation, but I got a life to live here, and what am I going to do? And I can't take care of a baby, and so they take the next day abortion pill.
Mm.
It happens, even though we inform, even though you show the most graphic, there is still I don't know how else to say it, but the self-centered, selfish, sinful person, what about me? Now, going to the extreme will have effect. I'm not denying that. But I need to point out that presupposition that if you just show them they'll change is not true. Otherwise, people wouldn't be smoking cigarettes, people wouldn't be using drugs, and on you can go with many things where we have been graphic about the pictures, and yet it hasn't changed anything.
Well, that is true. I mean, there has been a push, and in some parts of Europe they have actually adopted laws that say you have to put pictures of diseased lungs on packs of cigarettes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you know, actually, not to laugh about diseased lungs, but the reason I laugh is because what they found is it... The kids like to buy that because it makes them look tough. I'm smoking the really bad cigarettes.
Sure, yeah.
It did have the opposite effect. You refresh my memory about, I've read stories like that. Hey, let's bring Larry in on this because Larry wants to add to the discussion about hypocrisy. Good morning, Larry.
Good morning. Good morning there, Pastor Andrew.
Hi, Larry.
You know, let's look at this from a different point of view. You know, we always say that, and it's pretty much true, I have to agree, that people that are in favor of gun control, a lot of them are pro-abortion, right, Roland?
You can probably make that argument.
A lot of them are.
Yeah.
But we call that being hypocritical, don't we?
Well, see, the problem is in the age of the tyranny of language, we just change the definition of our terms as we go. So people compartmentalize today. That's what boomers do. They can say it's two completely different issues.
Right. Okay. But then we use the word felicitous inconsistency, and we give those that worship outside of the Bible in some vein, might even take Jesus out of the church. We give them a pass, sort of.
How so?
You follow my line of thinking? How so?
Yeah. Give an example.
The words felicitous inconsistency are saying, you can be saved outside. You can have a teaching that's not dogmatically correct, but yet you put your faith in jeopardy by allowing yourself to be taught something, even knowingly. You could know you're in a false teaching church, but you would stay and you would kind of rely on this felicitous inconsistency instead of allowing the Bible to speak to you and set all the standards for a holy life. We allow sort of a hypocritical thinking there because we use the terminology of one of our church fathers, which I'm not in total accord with. But then we turn around and we say, well, there's people that are in favor of gun control, but they're also in favor of to protect the children, but they're also a proponent of abortion. And I totally agree with you, Roland, about exposing abortion. You could actually, there's four types of abortion. You could do a four-part series, and you could show the American people how horrendous it is. You know, I wasn't really all that familiar with the saline procedure, and a dead baby is delivered. I mean, it's repulsive to think we live in the 21st century in the greatest nation in the world ever, and we kill our babies? What kind of thinking is that?
Pastor, jump in.
A couple interesting things here. first, I think you're underscoring what I've been trying to slowly push towards, that it is a shock to the faithful, anyway, to the faithful, that we will destroy lives. But the presupposition by many people is not that it is a life. Even though it may look like a life,
right.
Even though you see it torn apart, these pictures of shock are not changing them because they have a different presupposition. You might even say a different faith or a different heart. And so that's my concern at getting too graphic, because it is desensitizing us. And I suppose there comes a point where I have to say the world's desensitized anyway, so give it to them, because there's no other way. Yet I'm not sure that's always serving a purpose, and especially because we think as Christians, because we're so much in belief of God's word, knowledge, as it has changed our hearts, that if we just impose or put out there the right knowledge, it'll change their hearts.
But you know what, Pastor? 55 million babies later, the way we've been doing it hasn't worked either, has it? Think about that. 55 million babies later, I would be willing to take the chance and say, you know what? Scripture says the angels rejoice over one that can be saved. If you can get the word out, and I don't care how graphic it has to be done.
And well, see, I'm suggesting we have been graphic, and it has changed the hearts of faithful. My wife and I, we are a proud parents of two adopted girls. I know many other people, because we adopt, that also adopt, that take a very strong stance on life. It has changed many people, but it won't change our culture. That's the work of the Holy Spirit, not just knowledge.
And I'll just point this out also, Larry, just for your consideration, and that is part of what I think the pro-life movement suffers from is what all of American culture suffers from, and that is we expect things to be fixed now. These things just take a long time. I mean, Kathleen, who's one of the listeners, sent me an email yesterday with this out of the, you know, out of the Arkansas Senate. They just passed a bill, SB 134, out of the Arkansas State House, Protection of Life with a Heartbeat Bill. It passed 26-8. The governor is expected to sign it if it makes it to him. And that is, if you can detect a heartbeat, you can't abort it. I think progress is being made.
Oh, I got one quick other question for you there, Pastor.
Yeah.
What's your feeling and what's the sentiment of the Missouri Synod on carrying a weapon into the church service?
That was the other issue about Arkansas.
I don't know if we have an official policy or not. I don't know.
I don't either. Well, I know that we do have guys with guns in church. They're called off-duty policemen.
Yes,
so
all
it's
means,
no big deal. Let's grab one more quick call from Lael, who's been waiting. We got about a minute and a half. Lael, go ahead.
Okay, quickly. Thanks, Roland and Pastor. What we can teach in the secular world is the harm not only done, and this is an abortion, to the child, but the harm that happens to that mother. Because intellectually, she calls it a grouping of cells, but emotionally, in reality, in terms of her nature, it is a child. She is greatly harmed by it. And that teaching just people about what is the nature of a woman and a child may also incur a second thought. Not, you know, we know it's godly. Or a godly sin, and you know, a sin, but the fact that the harm that it does, the repercussions of all the women who had this, is enormous.
Lael, thanks. Pastor, you got a half minute.
I think it's extremely important that we in our churches, first and foremost, teach what is right and wrong, and there are several Christian denominations that are not teaching that. That breaks my heart. And I think there we need to be very strong about it. There is a difference, though, in the public sector versus the church. Now, I just spoke about the church. We need to be strong. In the public sector, by all means, we should try. We should make every effort. But we need to realize just because it works in the church might not work in the public sector.
Pastor Dave Andrus serves at Lutheran Blind Mission. And again, what's that website, sir?
Blindmission.org.
Now, don't overdo it on the chicken wings, okay? Enjoy that Super Bowl.
Bratwurst and sauerkraut.
Oh, even better. Take care, my friend.
And to you. Thanks.
All right, guys. Have a really, really great weekend. We'll see you Monday. God bless. Be safe. We'll miss you till then. Bye-bye.
Listen to The Bible Study Monday through Friday at this same time. The Bible Study is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for The Bible Study to continue. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can contact us on the web at kfuo.org. Download archives at kfuo.org. The Bible Study is heard weekdays on KFUO Radio, a broadcast ministry of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.